Welcome back to New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. And on this May Day, I can prove to you that corporate media is emotionally manipulative propaganda. But first, we need to get our souls right with God. So let's go to our holy climate church and get a sermon of papal bull crap via the Christian Science Monitor. The Vatican, James, hosted a conference on the moral dimensions of climate change, and the Pope is said to have prepared a major encyclical on the environment, with Pope Francis poised to issue a full-throated call to address the looming threats of climate change this year. Conservative Catholic skeptics are crying foul. The Pope has already prepared a major encyclical or moral guide for the globe's 1.2 billion Catholics, which later this year will stress the imperative of addressing human-caused global warming. And this past Tuesday, the Pontifical Academy of Sciences and other organizations hosted a summit at the Vatican called Protect the Earth, Dignify Humanity, the Moral Dimensions of Climate Change and Sustainable Development, billed as a meeting to help strengthen the global consensus on the issue. James, this article goes on to talk about how Catholics, a rather quote-unquote typically conservative bunch, are alarmed at Pope Bob Damage Control II or whatever he is. And one of them was quoted, "You demean the office that you hold, and you demean the church, whom it is your sworn duty to protect and defend in advance. Stand back, listen to both sides, and do not take sides in politics," said Christopher Monckton, former British advisor to Thatcher, devoted Catholic, and longtime climate skeptic. James, his name sounded familiar to me, and rightfully so. You interviewed him about 6 years ago, so we'll include that link for people to show that we've been talking about this for a long time, and I always have to point out that we will provide the links for every source cited here, and you just got to make sure you click the show more. And James, there's an interesting bit of back and forth that comes with Christian Science Monitor and the Harvard Political Review, which shows for young voters, climate change takes a back seat. So the Harvard Public Opinion Project happens every spring and fall, and it's the largest poll of young people. And it shows it's not as hyped and the numbers aren't as good in a lot of ways if we've shown them to be fudged. Here's another one. This from the Scripps Institution of Oceanography at UC San Diego. Arctic sea loss likely to be reversible. Scenarios of a sea ice tipping point leading to a permanently ice-free Arctic Ocean were based on oversimplified arguments. James, you submitted a couple of these stories, and I have a couple more to throw back to you, but it's becoming the religion. It has become the religion.
That's exactly the point, isn't it? And this is not a new point. It's been pointed out many times by myself and others that this is a type of religion, and that basically there is these carbon atonements which we have to use to pay for our original sin of existing on this planet and breathing out carbon monoxide is actually a bad gas, carbon dioxide not so much. But I mean it is truly being brought out into the open here. If you don't believe in climate change, God will punish you. I mean, this is as blatant as it gets. And I mean, there is no end to stories that we could point to, like that one, that new study showing, you know what, that Arctic sea ice problem, well, apparently it's reversible, and in fact reversing. After it's reaching its nadir a few years ago, it's been steadily building back up, which makes articles like this one from December of 2007 sound interesting in retrospect. Arctic summers ice-free by 2013, blares the headline on BBC News back in 2007, because the science is settled. There's no dispute. No one can dispute any of these facts that they're talking about, except when it turns out retrospectively that they were completely wrong. But just sweep that under the rug and continue to pay your carbon atonements to the carbon priests like Al Gore and others, who are set to become the world's first carbon billionaire on the back of this scam. And don't question anything, because ignorance is strength.
I recently was on with Jack Blood, and we were talking about the recent Global Citizen concert. And of course, it's basically millionaires jetting in from around the world to sort of wag their fingers at the plebs as though they're the problem and not the entire corrupt industries bent on the destruction of not only ourselves, but the world we live in, but they want to blame it all. Blame it all on us. Or, you know, blame the victim, essentially. So, James, one last bit of research after the bit from Scripps and also the Harvard Political Review, we've got one that shows up under a few different headlines on only a couple of websites with headlines like, "Will climate change affect the way we write our songs?" Or, "Wonder why our songs are getting worse? It might be because of global warming." But from Raw Story, scientists claim climate change has impact on music. And this bit of research basically says that because Paul McCartney and Bob Dylan and pop songs always talk about the sun and sunshine, that must mean that it's getting warmer because less songs are about cold and rain and ice. That's the kind of work. These guys actually have done other work in, back in 2011, meteorological phenomena in Western classical orchestral music. So I've got the PDF for that one. They have not published this new one about pop music. But James, it's bizarre. I'm not sure if, when you put all those together, what where that leaves us thinking about our institutions. What do you, I don't know.
Let's just leave it there for now.
Okay, let's do that. That's best. Because I want to get to this fascinating story. It's that subliminal PSA from AARP. There was a new ad from AARP, the American Association of Retired Persons. It was a commercial showing a public service announcement. And if you paid close attention, and this is, of course, because there's millions of people out there analyzing propaganda, and that's how we learn about these things, open source style, you hear something in the background. There's a woman in the video. She's watching the news, and she gets up to go check on her daughter in another room. And in the background, you can hear a news report talk about riots nationwide and a declaration of martial law by government emergency services. So the quote's in there: "Riots nationwide have prompted local governments to declare martial law. The president is asking that citizens find safety and remain calm. Authorities are working to contain the outbreak." Now, James, this story was already gaining attention because any way you look at it, and I make media in the straight world on a small level, and you instantly know that's you had to make that up. That's not a natural report. And interestingly enough, just as we were coming to tape this episode, James, you brought an interesting update to this story. Can you talk about that?
Yes. Well, I was just looking up this video on YouTube to see if I could find the original, and the AARP have just reposted this PSA, which I understand was originally from 2004. Well, they've just reposted it just a few hours ago, and now the audio, if you listen carefully, has been re-updated. So now we see that actually they are, they've replaced the audio with a weather report, and they have a little note under the video in the comment section to say that they didn't want the message of the video to be distracted by the audio in the background, which was apparently some pro bono PR company had used some stock background noise for this, some vintage noise, because they wanted to give an old-timey feel to this, or some ridiculous explanation like that, which doesn't make any sense. As you say, there's no way that something like that ends up in the background of this by accident. It has to be a piece of media that was deliberately inserted into the audio mix, which brings up, of course, the question of subliminals.
That's it. So it's interesting, James, I think, to make the point that on this video, on the repost from AARP, they only say, they only give the reason as a reply to someone's comment. Someone named Bradley Strong says, "Hey, why the repost, AARP?" And they said, because as you noted, the pro bono ad agency that created this video used a pre-existing fictional vintage audio file as background noise to invoke an earlier era. And James, you and I joked about, oh, yeah, those vintage MP3 files that go back millennia, right?
Yeah, those vintage martial law declaration MP3 files that are just everywhere online. I mean, you find them all over the place. Yeah, again, it's ridiculous. And it's so important that people understand how this works and that this was put together on purpose, because it is important to understand that there are things like this that we do not pick up on, generally speaking, 99 times out of 100. You have to strain to hear it, but subconsciously what is being taken in can be quite different. And people who are incredulous about such ideas can look at things like Darren Brown has an interesting special on controlling people through subliminals, and I've talked about some of his work before, like the Sirhan programmed killer program he did on Channel 4 in the UK several years ago. Some interesting work there. So I think subliminals are to be taken seriously, and I think they do have an effect in shaping the public psyche, and we have to look at that when it comes to stupid things like this that just come and go, and you never know that idea is being implanted in the back of your head.
And it's being implanted in the back of your head while you're watching corporate media fearmonger about riots and chaos and all. It comes together in a stew, James, at an interesting time where we're watching Jade Helm and those things that we've talked about in recent weeks, and now add Baltimore on top of that. And these things are, it becomes literally a part of that background noise. And I'll just make a reference, James. I don't know if you've ever read anything about the original Exorcist film back in the early 70s. It has such a hype kind of surrounding it. And at the time, it was amped to be just the scariest movie ever, people passing out in it. So you had the general mania surrounding the movie. So you had people at a heightened state going into the film with their preconceived, you know, jitteries. And they have subliminal effects in that film. They talk about the director, Friedkin, puts in superimposed images of devil's faces when Reagan's being x-rayed. There's a lot going on psychologically in that movie to agitate the viewer to make it a more effective horror movie experience. So if they were doing that in 1973, fast forward to 2015. James, I think we absolutely now need some good news this week, as a child is the first patient cured of a fatal illness using a 3D printed implant. This from the UK Independent. A 3-year-old boy has become the first patient in the world to be cured of a potentially fatal illness with a biodegradable implant made to the patient's exact specifications by 3D printing technology. The boy was one of three babies in the U.S. at the C.S. Mott Children's Hospital at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor who underwent pioneering emergency surgery involving the insertion of 3D printed splints into their throats. They were designed to keep their windpipes open while allowing the infants to grow normally. Scientists announced that all three boys responded well to the treatment, with one child now deemed effectively cured. His biodegradable implant has already partially been reabsorbed by his body, meaning he no longer has to rely on it completely for breathing. So, James, it's really, they're all just tools. It all depends on how we use it, right?
I think that's exactly the point. And like with any other technology, it is a neutral tool. It is how we use it. And it's about who controls that technology. And the wonderful, the exciting thing about 3D printing is that it is coming down to the individual level now. It's not some expensive piece of machinery that can only be used by universities and other labs that are being funded by governments and big corporations. It's now literally something you can create on your desktop from parts that you scrounge up at the local hardware store. People who are incredulous at that idea should check out my recent interview with Dr. Joshua Pierce, running a lab at Michigan Tech, who just offered an open source 3D printing course for 50 students last fall, where the students basically take a couple hundred dollars worth of parts that they scrounge up from various places and learn how to put together their own 3D printer, which they then use in the rest of the course to actually create various materials and things. And they learn how to do all of this on open source design software. It's all open source, open hardware, open software. It is an incredible, revolutionary thing that's happening right now, and it is what we make of it. So I hope people are at least checking into this phenomenon. Again, I think it is the question of who controls the technology, and the exciting thing about this is that it's the people who at least can control this technology.
Absolutely. A few more good news next week. Headlines: Chipotle bans GMO ingredients, and the U.S. officially lowers the recommended fluoride levels in drinking water for the first time in over 50 years, and Montana nullifies federal police militarization program. Now, to go out on this episode 227 from New World next week, we always implore the audience to submit stories to us on Twitter using hashtag New World next week. And that's how, over these last couple of years, James, I think the amount of news that we're able to present has grown exponentially with stories we wouldn't be able to follow. And again, that speaks back to that sort of open source, crowdsourcing kind of way that we're trying to push forward. So some of the New World Next Week updates on stories that we have been following on recent weeks on these episodes. Plane hacking goes even more mainstream, James. American Airlines planes grounded by an iPad app error. So you don't even really have to hack anymore. They're just going down by regular just computer errors. Meanwhile, Ryanair gets hacked, $5 million sent to China in an interesting bit of espionage. You can follow that story on Zero Hedge. A couple of stories about the Clinton Foundation, dirty money from the Russian Putin cronies. So if you followed New World next week, you know we were on top of the Clinton Foundation story weeks before it broke and now has become kind of the dominant anti-Hillary narrative. Meanwhile, Goldman Sachs paid Bill Clinton $200,000 for a speech right before they lobbied for Hillary Clinton. Meanwhile, Governor Abbott orders Texas Guard to monitor Jade Helm drills. This is being spun as the population is freaking out, so I don't want everybody to wig, so I'll have the Guard monitor these drills just to show the public that this isn't a martial law takeover. A couple of headlines out of the UK via Daz Alt Theory, always following interesting developments in the UK. Election chaos could trigger a Lehman moment for the pound and protests as London reacts to increased expenses for the majority. Now, transpose that with what's happening here in America right now as we have the hashtag Baltimore riots and we see them spreading and we see so many things turning into, as I noted at the top of the show, this sort of emotionally manipulated propaganda. I don't want to downplay any of these stories. I don't want to poo-poo on anyone's issue and lives, you know, that I haven't walked in their shoes. But we're James, I think, kind of entering what's probably going to be a long, hot summer. And a lot of these situations, I think, are being pushed. And I hope that's why we're trying to sort of analyze them and put them on the record here in these episodes. So I've got an interesting story about the Baltimore riots and some of the forces manipulating and pushing it. But James, I'm off next week for a little vacation, but I've got some homework for us. So this is an interesting one. On May 4th, so all next week, the Project on International Order and Strategy at Brookings and the Global Public Policy Institute of Berlin will formally release three Global Governance Futures 2025 research papers. Written by the 2015 Global Governance Futures Fellows, these papers are going to focus on three issues, James: global arms control, internet governance, and geoengineering.
That is chilling, and I hope that people will keep an eye on those reports, because it is important that we dissect that propaganda to understand better the trajectory they're taking us on. Just the fact that there is a Global Governance Future Chair or Research Fellowship or whatever is in and of itself interesting, if not surprising. So thank you for bringing that to our attention. And please take a well-deserved week off next week, and we'll be back better and bigger and stronger than ever 2 weeks from now. So James, thank you for these stories.
Thanks so much, man. Take care.